Okay, it is 8:30, so I'm sorry, going to have to cut our conversation. We'll continue later. And I want to welcome Miriam Gedweiser to her debut, if I can say, for Torah Motion. A pleasure to have her. Miriam teaches Talmud and Tanakh at Ramaz Upper School, and she also teaches at Drisha. She has a BA in the history, philosophy, and social studies of science and medicine. And she's a JD, a lawyer. She worked for a number of years at a commercial litigation firm in a large firm, and she clerked for justice. She teaches widely across North America, and it's a pleasure to welcome Miriam to our Parsha Shir. Bakasha.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here and I appreciate the invitation. I'm looking forward to learning for the next hour or so. So this week's Parsha, Vayechi, sort of, I called the shir, I don't know if the name came out, I called it on Yaakov's deathbed. This is kind of like the end. It's both the end of Yaakov's life and also the end of Sefer Bereishit. One of the things I want to do today is sort of see how those two, tying up those two things goes together. How like tying up Yaakov's life and his family life is very connected to tying up Sefer Bereishit and leading into Sefer Shemot. That's one thing. And another thing is through doing that to sort of, we're gonna pull together several midrashim that I think are all getting at the same feature of Yaakov's, it's maybe it's a little cryptic, but the same feature of Yaakov's life that seems to come out in the, through this parsha. So I guess I can share a screen. Is that how we do it? I will do that. So there is a source sheet. I don't know if the link went around. I can put it in if people prefer to follow it on their own in the chat. I don't know if there's a separate link, but if you want to look at the doc, you can. The beginning, this is sort of selections from the wind down of Yaakov's life, let's say. And you know, we can actually this is not what I meant to share. Meaning this is what I meant to share, but I'm going to share a different version of it. Sorry. I think this is the one. Yeah. So here we are. And I see some people are in here now. Great. Okay. So basically, like this is sort of the wind down. Yaakov's life has been kind of heavy so far, maybe in ways that I think are going to come back for us in a minute. But you know, at this point, Yaakov and all his children are in Egypt. Yosef is still in charge in Egypt. Yosef has these two children, and here, we, for example, see Vayechi Yaakov Eretz Yisrael, right? Yaakov lived in Egypt for 17 years, and he seems to be getting up in age, and he. It seems like his time is coming close to die, and he calls his son Yosef, and he says, right. Promise me you're not going to bury me in Egypt. And he says, swear to me, and he swears to him. And then he calls him again and he says, well, actually, this is going to be sort of important, but he had hard remail after that. But Yomer li Yosef, he said to Yosef, who he is an interesting question, right? Hinei avicha chole, your father is ill. And so Yosef took his two sons, he took his two sons to go visit his father, and they say, oh, your son Yosef has come. Yaakov sits up. We have this moment of the blessing and the sort of switcheroo. Okay, great. And then after sort of, maybe we can see more of this over here. Right, after sort of, right after he gives the bracha to these children, then he sort of he says, this I left off the main source sheet, but I hope you can see it on my screen. But Yomar Yisrael, I'm in Pasuk 21, Chaf Aleph. Hinei Nochi Meit, right? I'm gonna die. Right? God will be with you and he will return you to the land of your fathers. Right? And when you get there, I'm giving you this extra portion. Okay. So sort of a few things come out that maybe we're going to come back to as we see later, but right, there's some sort of, we're seeing like a greatest hits maybe of Yaakov's interactions with Yosef, right? First, he sort of, he blesses him. He says, he gets sick and then he blesses his sons. And he tells him, he gives him this sort of secret, which is like the secret code of Judaism, which is, right, God will take you out of here. And Yosef might be thinking like, I'm fine, right? I just brought you here. What do you mean God will take me out of here? But can you guys hear me?
We can hear you fine. We can hear you fine. Keep going. Yeah. Unless you froze now. Okay. Does anybody hear anything, or is it only me? Right, that's what I think. Okay, Miriam is frozen. I imagine she'll get back in a moment. Okay. For the last class of the year, you know, we have to have a symbolic of the year we've had. Right, you should be able to hear me. Okay, I assume she's going to log back on. Okay, everybody be patient. I apologize, but...
Just when you thought it was safe to get back in the water.
That's it. No, like I said, for the last class, okay. Miriam, can you hear
me? I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. I said this is symbolic of the year 2020. This is the last year of the year. You have the zchut. Think of the 306th year we've had on Zoom. This is our 306th class.
Wow.
And you're giving the last one. And of course, something has to, you know, not work.
Amazing. So I'm going to switch to phone audio, just so in case that happens again, I'll have continuity of voice.
Okay.
Just give me a second.
We do hear you fine now. So go on.
I understand, but I feel like...
Yosef doesn't want to leave Egypt. That's where we left off. What does Yosef have to leave Egypt for? This is, you know, that's where we were.
Right. Great. Okay. Just let me just do this so that I can feel secure. I'll put it that way. Enter your participant ID. I am in the meeting. Amazing.
More than 40
participants. Wow. So nice. Okay.
Great. Thanks again. Wait, are you still there? Now you can hear me, right? I thought it froze for a second.
I can hear
panicking.
You.
Okay. I'm not on both, I don't think. I think I just switched from the phone to the computer, or the other way. So basically, right, Yaakov tells Yosef, right, Hashem will bring you back to Egypt. Which Yosef might say, like, why would I need to go back from Egypt, right? Like, I just brought you here, right? What do you mean you're going to bring me back there? And I think that's going to be part of the key, right? It's Yaakov is trying to give Yosef direction about what's going to happen, right? And maybe Yaakov has some knowledge about what's going to happen, right? Where might he have that knowledge from? Yaakov could have some of the, what we might call a Mesorah, right? From Avraham, that there's this thing we call the Brit Bein HaBetarim, all the way back in Genesis 14, 15, something like that, about how, right, your descendants are going to go to a strange land, right? They're going to be slaves, they're going to be oppressed, and then they're going to come back with a lot of stuff. And in other parshiot, we can talk about how maybe Yaakov's life foreshadows this whole process. He also is a stranger in a place, he is oppressed, and then he works for Lavan, and then he comes back. He might have thought it was over, but when Yaakov finds himself later on back in Mitzrayim, he knows the story, right? In some ways, because he's done it before, but he knows that, in fact, that was just the trial run, right? This is, you know, it's happening, right? The thing that Avram told me about is happening now, and he's sort of telling Yosef, whatever you think about what's happening, here's what's really happening. What's happening is that this is the beginning of a process that is not going to look like it looks now forever, right? It's going to look maybe much less pleasant for you, but you will come back, right? And part of sort of keeping the covenant alive in Mitzrayim is knowing that and sort of relying on that. Okay, I'm going to go back to my screen. Great. So then, Yaakov says, he says, come gather around. I'm going to tell you what's going to happen in the end of days. Right? And then he launches into this point. So now that Yaakov says, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen in the end of days. And then he tells us all these things. He gives a little poem for every son. What's going to happen in the end of days? Right? Like, can we read chapter 49 in Bereishit and know what's going to happen in the end of days? No. So that's going to be another sort of this that is, I mean, you could try. If you can read these and deduce the end of days, that's great. I'd be happy to hear about it. But like, another piece of this sort of way that we're wrapping up both Yaakov and Sefer Bereishit is that Yaakov, in sort of the conclusion of his personal family life, seems to be trying to connect his story to larger things at play, right? He's connecting to the breathing of the terrain, and maybe he's connecting to some sort of eschatological vision, but that doesn't really come out. And one of the things we're going to see is midrashim that are sensitive to that. But the first thing I want to talk about is is even before that, which is this. Does this scene of Yaakov sort of gathering his children and giving them brachot have any antecedents, right? Any sort of prior, is it echoing anything that's already happened in Sefer Bereishit?
Well, just with Yitzchak and Yaakov and Esau.
Right, we tend to think of this is like the same thing that Yitzchak did with Yaakov, but Esau says, I'm going to die, right? So come and I'll give you brachot, right? We often think that way. I just wanted you to remember that as you read this book, because this source doesn't seem to think so. And that's kind of an interesting thing. Okay, so here we go. There's seven things that are sort of amazing that happened in the world. This is Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. Shiva moftiim, right? Wonders or sort of things that are noteworthy were done in the world. Shaloni Ruku Otan, meaning these were things that were innovative in their time. Yeah, can I break? Esther? No. We'll pop the questions in a minute. Right, the first one, Miyom Shenivru Shemayim Ba'aretz Lo Haya Adam Nitzal Min Ha'esh, Achava Avraham Avinu, right? Right. For example, right, people always died when they came in contact with the fire until Avraham Avinu. We know some of us know the Midrash, right? Avraham gets thrown into the fire of Nimrod and he's saved, right? So we have a bunch of sort of wait, what just happened? I just did something wrong. Okay. Okay, Yaakov and Esau weren't in the room at the same time is very true. Okay. I just accidentally changed the view for some reason. There it goes, fine. There you're back. I know you don't need to hear the whole background of my Zoom trouble. Great. So, right, the first thing is, right, that this thing happened that never happened before, which is Avraham Avinu was saved from being burned, okay? Great. The second thing is that, Hofei Hasheni, and each of these sort of has more, right? Nobody ever gave birth at such a late age until Sarah, right? So all of these things sort of happen. The first time we hear about them in the Torah or in Avraham's case in the Midrash was the first time they happened ever. And they're sort of a proof text for it. The third one, which is sort of a precursor to ours, which is that until Avraham, people didn't age, right? It says people didn't develop gray hair, but they didn't age, meaning they sort of, they look the same. There's a proof text for this, right? That finally Avraham sort of looks old and that this was actually a form of kavod to him to differentiate from his son who looked like him. Having a marker of old age is actually a good thing, something that people want, okay? Maybe because people sort of, as we're going to see, people like knowing that your life is a process and that it will end. Sometimes people like to sort of have a marker of that proceeding of time. Okay, and the source of this is ours. That's just sort of to set the scene, right? We're sort of talking about things that happened for the first time with somebody. Incidentally, by the way, this is the first time you would see the word, I don't know if it's the first time you see the word Zakein, actually, you should look that up. But usually these are sensitive to something in the text. So I'll say to Rabbi, I'll read in Hebrew, but I'll translate. Miyom shenivra ha'olam, lo haya adam chole, right? Nobody was ever sick for the whole world. What does that mean? Nobody ever got sick. Everybody was just perfectly healthy all the time. What it means is you would never get sick you could get injured, but you wouldn't get sick and have this whole process. Am I going to get better? I don't know what's going to happen, right? Either you would get injured and then you would either get better or die, or b'chol makom shehiya adam, im b'darach, im b'shuk, v'atash, v'haya nefsho yotzei minichar avamei, right? When it came your time to die, you just would die, right? You'd sneeze. This is people say bless you when you sneeze, right? You'd sneeze and then your breath, it's sort of it, right? The breath that's been going in and out of your body goes achoo, it's gone, and then you die. You fall over dead, right? So there's this death used to be this sudden thing that could happen anywhere. It could happen when you're walking in the shuk. It could happen anywhere, right? Achaba Yaakov Avinu Ubikesh Rachamim Alzot. And Yaakov prayed about this, the Amar Lifnehas Kadosh Baruch, or before the Blessed One, right? Ribono Shalom, right? He said, God, Master of the Universe, Al Tikachat Nafshi Mimeni Ad Asher Ani Metaveh Et Banai Uvenei Beiti. Right? He said, please don't take my soul until I can put my affairs in order. Right? And God sort of granted his wish, Shene Amar. And here's our proof text. Remember, we still don't know who said this to Yosef, but somebody said to Yosef, your father is sick, right? This is the first time that the word chola appears in the Tanakh, as far as I know, right? And the Midrash is saying that's because it's the first time that the phenomenon appeared in the world, right? There never was a person who got sick, right? You would just sort of drop dead, and Yaakov, this is the same way as we might think that aging and the physical markers of aging are not something that we want, right? And this Midrash is saying, no, that's something that Abraham prayed for. We might think that illness is not something that we want. And this Midrash is saying, no, this is something that Yaakov prayed for because he wanted to have warning to put his affairs in order. Okay? He got this warning. Right? Everybody was sort of astonished. What is going on? Right? Therefore, when you sneeze, you should say something nice to people. Okay. And then it goes on, but I don't want to leave it at that. So interestingly, right, we all said, oh, well, but this deathbed scene of Yaakov sounds similar to the deathbed scene of Yaakov and Esav. Of Yitzchak vis-a-vis Yaakov and Esav. If you look back at it, it's actually not a deathbed scene, right? Yitzchak doesn't die. And in fact, when he calls his sons, he says, I'm going to die, v'loyad, and I don't know when, right? So why don't I bless you now before anything too bad happens, right? Like, it's sort of, there's some uncertainty baked into that. And this is the first time that somebody dies with other people present right there. He gathers them, he gives them his bracha, and then he dies on the bed at that moment. So it is in some ways the first real deathbed scene in Tanakh. Right? We have others later, I believe, in the Haftarah for the Sukkot, we have David's deathbed. But right, the Midrash is picking up on something, which is that this is the first deathbed. But I think it's also picking up on something about Yaakov, which is that Yaakov is maybe the first person who really needs it. And that's what I want to explore a little bit. That Yaakov might be the first person who really, like, he can't just be like, well, I might as well give you the bracha now. Like, he has a lot of unfinished business, let's say, which maybe you can imagine what it is. So I've mentioned a few times this idea of a Yomer Liyosef. First of all, as many people would suggest, it indicates a little bit of a distance, right? Somebody has to tell you, Yo's father is sick, right? So the Midrash that we just saw is sort of explaining that in its own way, saying like, well, this was like a really weird newsworthy phenomenon, so somebody came rushing to tell Yosef about it. But it could also be that, like, in the pshat level, right, Yosef is kind of doesn't necessarily know what's going on with his father day to day. And that's something that the Dazakanim is picking up. He says, "Mashma shalohe Yosef regil etzel Yaakov." It sounds like Yosef did not visit Yaakov regularly, right? We also find very clearly, no, Yosef, he says, he calls his son Yosef and he says, sort of, who are these children, right? Or he called him, he hadn't been there before, maybe, right? So Dazakanim is sort of quoting someone who says, right? Hatam right? Yosef was basically avoiding his father because he didn't want his father to be like, hey, thanks for bringing me down to Egypt. By the way, how did you get here? Right? Good question. How did you get here? And then he would tell him the whole story, and his father would curse his brother, right? V'nimtzah is an interesting sort of way of saying v'nimtzah machariv et ha'ulam kulo. He could destroy the whole world, meaning Yosef is trying to keep certain very unpleasant potential interpersonal interactions in a bottle, right? Because he's afraid that if they get out, like, who knows what's going to happen. Shari Rachelimo, right? And then it sort of brings up that actually, like, Yaakov, once in a previous unpleasant interpersonal interaction where somebody in his family had done something wrong that Yaakov didn't even know about, Yaakov accidentally cursed them. This is the story of Rachel, how she stole the Tefillin from Yaakov, from Lavan, and Yaakov didn't know that. So he said, anybody who has it shall surely die. And then sure enough, Rachel dies. That's sort of how the Midrash sees it. So Yosef is basically very worried about his father's anger or negative reaction and says, okay, so, you know, like, I don't have to see my dad every day, and maybe it won't come up, right? Or maybe his dad gets the hint that he doesn't want it to come up if he's sort of avoiding him. But I think that that insight in some ways, it can come out of this pasuk, it can come out of anything, right? Yaakov is coming to Egypt. We hear the brothers among themselves, like two parshiot ago, discussing remorse or what they did. Did they do the right thing? They feel bad, whatever it is. We never hear like a whole family sort of process group about what on earth happened here, right? And in some ways, that's sort of hovering over the whole end of both Yaakov's life and of the book, right? Because part of the conflict about the brothers is there one chosen brother in this generation like there have been in the previous generations, or is everybody going to be chosen? And that's sort of maybe the root of the conflict between the brothers and Yosef, and that's kind of not totally resolved. It's unresolved enough that even after Yaakov blesses them all and dies, the brothers are concerned that Yosef is going to try and lord it over, right? Which he graciously declines to do, but okay. So I would say, right, Yaakov is the person who sort of has the first deathbed scene. The Midrash is present, and he asks for it because he knows, I would say, that he is the person with the most unfinished business out there, right? Like, his family is like, everything might look fine from the outside, right? Everybody came in, there's 70 of us, it's great, we're living in Eretz Goshen, we're all awesome, right? But like, it's not actually that awesome because like, one person could say the wrong thing and it could devolve into like a huge screaming match and no one will ever speak to each other again. And there goes the Israel, right? So that's sort of where we stand. Now I want to look at sort of maybe two tracks. I'm going to spend most of the time on one of them that seem to be responding to that, and specifically to the way that Yaakov's bracha to the son, to his multiple sons, is introduced, which goes like this. So this is the version in the Bavli, and then there's two other versions in Bereishit Rabbah that we'll look at afterwards. Some of you may be familiar with the Midrash, that's fine. But Anan Mai Tam Amrin Lei, right, so we're talking about Shema. We say, why do we say Baruch Shem Kavon Machuto Le'olam Ba'ed? Kedederech Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish, according to the opinion of Reish Lakish, who says the following. Vayikra Yaakov Abana Vayomar Ha'asru V'agidachom. So Yaakov calls his son, and he said, gather together, and I will tell you. It doesn't say the end of the pasuk, but we know, this is a classic Gemara, we know the end of the pasuk is V'agida Lachem Et Asher Yikra Lachem B'acharei Tanim. I will tell you what will happen to you at the end of days, right? Because Yaakov Legalov Devanav Ketayamim. So Yaakov sort of wanted to reveal to his sons the end of days, meaning like the end of history, the full story, what's going to happen and when, it sounds like, Honey. Right? Oh? Honey. Okay. V'nistel kami menu shchina. And then the shchina kind of left him, right? He was about to tell them, Yaakov has, it seems, a vision of everything. He may not know everything that happened in the past, but he knows the future. And he's about to tell them. He's like, and then it's just gone. And so instead, we end up with these nice little brachas for every brother. But we'll see. So he loses it at the last moment. Amar. Maybe there's sort of a blemish in my bed, meaning one of my children is not worthy, right? There's an expression, that all of your children are God-fearers, let's say. Maybe one of my children is not worthy, and that's why my plan to tell them the end of history isn't working, right? I gathered them all around because I, Yaakov, am trying to transmit the covenant to all of them. But it seems like maybe God doesn't want that because there's a problem with one of them who can't be brought into the covenant, right? And then he says, right, like Abraham and Ishmael, Yitzchak had Esav, right? My fathers didn't have such good luck having like perfect groups of descendants. Why should I? Maybe one of my children doesn't belong here, right? And now we're going to have to play a game. Which one? It's going to be like mafia or something, right? Like everybody has to figure out which is the brother who doesn't belong. But Amrula Banav, but his son said to him, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, right? They said, Shema Yisrael, not listen Israel, the people, but listen Israel, the person, right? They're speaking to Yaakov, aka Yisrael. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, God is our God, meaning we are all God-fearers. Your bed is complete. Don't worry about that, right? And they said, what they meant is Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, right? Our God is your one God. We're all in this together, right? And then Yaakov said, Baruch Shem Kavod Mechuto Olam Ve'ed, right? Like Yaakov, in hearing his children affirm that they were all sort of on board with his covenantal relationship with God, he said, thank God, I'm so glad. And that's where our Shema Yisrael Baruch Shem comes from, according to this Gemara. Okay, so a few things, right? First of all, I think, right, it's interesting that Yaakov thinks that part of being in the covenant is, I have Ruach HaKodesh, I can tell them what I know, right? And this Midrash doesn't say, why can't you tell them what you know? It just says God doesn't want you to. And it's not because they're not worthy, right? They are worthy, and still God doesn't want Yaakov to reveal the end, right? And I think that's going to be the kind of the key question that's going to animate the next two things. Would they have called him Yisrael by his first name? Good question. I think, you know, all is fair in Midrash in some ways, meaning like, is this an actual conversation that occurred, or is this trying to say something about, meaning, I guess I'll say this. I think that this is this idea of all the sons of Israel being included in the covenant and Yaakov sort of getting to die with the satisfaction that he knows that is something that can come out of the Torah text. This is a Midrashic way of bringing that idea out by telling this story, but I don't know that we have to necessarily assume that they would call him by his first name, but I don't know. Okay. So we have the, even though B'nai Israel, the literal 12 sons of Israel, are worthy of joining the covenant, they can't know the end, right? So I think that that's, and the question might be why. And there's sort of, there could be a bunch of reasons. I want to come back at the end to suggest that that's the, in some ways, that's the nature. I guess I'm going to suggest it now and come back and suggest it later as well, right? That's the nature of B'rit B'nai B'tarim, is that it has some amount of certainty, but not entirely, right? Nobody gets to, this is an idea from my teacher, Rabbi David Silver, right, who says this a lot when he talks about B'rit B'nai B'tarim, but nobody gets to live through the whole cycle of covenant. Nobody gets to see the whole process, right? Abraham sees the good part, and it says, you will die before the end happens, right? Everybody, Dor V'Yishuvuhin, it means multiple generations die before they come back, right? And that's sort of the nature of B'rit B'nai B'tarim, for whatever it's worth, is that it's a multi-generational process, and Yaakov trying to sort of like, do an end run, is that what they say in the sports, around that, is like not going to work, right? Like Hashem is like, no. But there's two midrashim that kind of flesh out that moment of like, what's it like when it sort of disappears? Here's like, Yaakov doesn't know why it's gone, right? So he has one hypothesis, which is one of my children isn't worthy, but that hypothesis is disproven, and we don't know in the Pesachim why it went away, if in fact his children are worthy. Let's read two potential ways of seeing that. So this is the Bereshit, one version from Bereshit Rabbah, which goes like this. Rabbah wants to say, or what will happen in the end of days, right? Rabbi Simon Amar, Mifleged Gog Heralachem. He wanted to show him, He wanted to show him the downfall of Gog, right? He's talking about like the real end of days, like eschatology, end of history, right? Hey, Mandat Amar, Bacharit Hayamim. Right. This is what's going to happen in the end of days, right? The words, the end of days, Acharit Yamim here by Yaakov and Acharit Yamim in Yechezkel, is where it's connected to Gog, right? So it's a little bit like a Gezer Sheva type distinction where the same word in two places kind of like connects the meaning, right? So Yaakov was trying, according to this midrash, to tell them about the real end of days, eschatological big battle, okay? Rabbi Yehuda Amar, Binyan Beit HaMikdash, Heralahem, right? He wanted to show them the building of the Beit HaMikdash. And each of these ideas is sort of interesting of like, what does he think they need to know? Do they need to know the full end of history? Do they need to know the end of this story, right? When they finally get out of Egypt, go to Eretz Israel and build the Beit HaMikdash, right? And each of them has a proof. Rabbanan Amri Bala Galo Lehemet Cape. Rabbanan said he wanted to show them the cape, maybe the time, right? The amount of time that it would take for them, the time that they would be redeemed, but it was covered, it was closed for him. Rabbi Huda Bashem, Rabbi Elazar. So far that's what the Bali said, right? He wanted to show them the cape, and it was he sort of was unable to. Rabbi Huda Bashem, Rabbi Elazar, Avina, Shani, right? Oh, sorry. Shnei Bnei Adam. This is gonna be in Mashal. So it's a Mashal, but it's a Mashal. But there's two people. There's two people. He's like Daniel. I'm going to skip down for a second. We bring before you. This is where we're going to really pick up. It's like our Bavli Pesachim, right? He wants to come tell them, but then, right? There's like this is sort of picking up on the switcheroo. He says, "I'm going to tell you what's going to happen at the end of days," and then he says, "Reuben, you're my firstborn son." Well, this is not like a big reveal about the future, right? You're my firstborn son is not a big reveal at all because it's true and it happened in the past. And even what he's talking about you know, the things that you may have done wrong in the past, Reuben, this is not like the end of days. So it's sort of picking up on that dissonance. It says, Mashal ohavav shal melech. Here's what it's like. Shehayah nifneh min ha'olam, right? A king's friend was dying. V'hayu banav, so Levina Midito, and his children are all gathered around his bed. Amar lehem bo v'galalacham mistorin shal melech. He says, I'm going to tell you the king's secret. right? Like, I've been the king's confidant for 20 years. I've kept his secrets, but now I'm dying and I'm going to tell you, right? I'm going to let you in because there's all this like crazy stuff that I know that I want you to know. Talainav, and he beat the malach. And then he looks up and there's the king standing in the door, right? Marlahen, and he says, oh, here's the big secret of the king, right? Actually, like, just treat the king with proper respect. That's the big secret of the king. Treat him with proper respect, right? So Yaakov Avinu Talai never Ashchina Omedet Al Gabav, right? It doesn't say that Shchina left him, right? In our original source, the Shchina left him, and that's why he couldn't reveal the end. Here he wants to reveal the end. He looks up, and the Shchina is there, giving him this, like, kind of look. And then he says, oh, okay, just like, please, you know, comport your lives properly, and I'm going to give each of you, like, Musar, basically. You know, you should always treat God properly. And that this is sort of a teaching moment for Yaakov. It's not that he's left confused, but he has a moment where he sort of, he was almost ready to betray God's confidence, and then he thinks better of it. Because again, right, maybe the nature of the covenantal relationship with God is that you don't get to know all the secrets. Now, how does this fit with Yaakov knowing apparently some secrets? That's a good question. But maybe because he's not going to be the one who's actually alive to see the end, so it's okay. I don't know. But, right, you don't get to know all the secrets. And Yaakov sort of comes to that realization on his own in this telling. It doesn't have to be taken away from him. He figures it out. And instead, he tells them not, right, the point is not for you to know the end of history. The point is for you to know what to do now. And you have to trust that you're going to get there, even though you, right, I may not get there with you, and you may not get there with you, right? You're not going to get there with you either, meaning with your descendants, but we all sort of have to do our part by being faithful to the covenant. That's one sort of way of framing it. This way is a little different. Similar but different. Okay, this is a different edition of Bereishit Rabbah that has a slightly different, like, meaning of different manuscript edition, I think. Okay. Right, so Yitzchak, it sort of starts that Yitzchak and Yaakov both tried to reveal the end to their sons and failed, right? Yitzchak Karala Esav, Bikesh Nagalot Lezakeis, he tried to reveal in the end. Here, I will correct this in real time. And God sort of hid it away from him. As it says, but he cried at Esav Beno Agadol, he called Esav, we could look at that another time. Right, and even Yaakov stuck to reveal it to the end. It seems like maybe Yitzchak succeeded in revealing it to Yaakov, but Yaakov, that's where the buck stops, right? Again, this pasuk that seems like he's promising more than he actually delivers, right? He promises, I'm going to tell you the end of days, and he delivers, like, Reuben, you're my firstborn child. Yes, thank you very much, Dad. Okay. What is it like? Right? Instead of in the previous one, it's the ohavo shel melech, the king's sort of confidant or friend. Here it's the king's servant, but he's like the king's, you know, chief butler, right? We met many people like that already in Sefer Bereishit. He's like, you know, the person in charge of the king's house. And that servant is about to die. The trusted servant is about to die. Okay. Kara. Right. So he's about to sort of like, he's not a confidant, right? He's a servant. And he calls his sons and he's going to tell them the secret that can get them out of service to the king. Right. He's going to tell them, like, where does the king keep the papers that will set you free? Right. Which is kind of like a very, very different image. It's not that I'm going to tell you the secret and then the resolution is like, oh, but part of a relationship is a mystery or something like that. It's like, I'm going to set you free. By knowing the end, it will free you from something, right? Then the king, like, hears about this plot and shows up and is like, and then the guy's like, okay, just like be good servants to the king. Right? So it's sort of the same message at the end. Hayu mechabdin otan ito oto kider shayitim hagiti mechabdo kolyamar. Right, you should honor the king, meaning God, the way I have. It's the same message from Yaakov, but it's a little different because here it's not that Yaakov has somehow come to the realization that he's sort of spilling a secret that's not his to spill, but that he's scared to, that he knows God doesn't want it for whatever reason, but Yaakov doesn't necessarily agree. Okay. I'm going to leave it at that. And then at the end, it says, right here, which is a did my third year song about that for those who like certain kinds of Jewish folk music. But right, the glory of God is to conceal a thing, right? That there's something about not knowing everything that is in fact part, sort of part and parcel of the covenantal relationship, right? That you can't know everything. That's not your role, right? So here we have it, right? Yaakov, so far, Yaakov starts out, right? He's the person who, I guess we've seen sort of two families, two midrashim, or two, one of which is really a family, right? The first midrash that I want is the first one we saw, right? Which is that Yaakov prays for a deathbed, for sort of warning that he's going to get sick because, you know, he needs to set his affairs in order. And I talked about how, yeah, Yaakov is the only one whose affairs are really not in order, right? We can kind of see this even in the winding down of his life that, you know, maybe he's not so in touch with his children. There's this big cloud that we never see them talk about, that maybe they never do talk about, that he doesn't know about. Maybe he has access to the like messianic eschatological future, but he doesn't know what happened to his own son, right? So like, he's the person who needs to tie things up. At the same time, one of the ways that he wants to tie things up isn't going to work, which is he wants to give them like the full bird's eye view of history. And God says no. Either God says no, and it's not because they're not worried, right? It's either because that's the sort of, there needs to be some mystery, or it's for some other reason that it's sort of just not your place. But they can't know about that. So I think that's sort of, those two midrashim are in some ways coming at the same thing, which is that Yaakov is uniquely positioned to pry and tie up. Okay. I think I'm going to go on for a second. Okay. Here is a third thread, right? So like the first thread is this idea that Yaakov is the first person who gets sick and has a death, has sort of warning about his own death. The second thread is that Yaakov, even though he has warning to sort of put his house in order, does not have the capacity to fully reveal everything that he knows, right? He can't actually transmit all of the information that he has. Although, as we saw, what can he transmit? He can transmit the basic idea of the Brit Ben Aviterim, right? God will take you out of here. Okay, the Seder. Maybe I'll come back to this in a second. I want to pick up that Brit Ben Aviterim thread for a second. So I'm going to switch over to Bereishit. It's not on the source sheet. I hope you will bear with me. Okay. So here we have all of these poetic things. Right. So Yaakov gets buried. He dies. Right. Joseph cries, and then he has him embalmed, and they bring him to be buried in Canaan. Right, and it's interesting, right? Joseph, when he's presenting it to Paro, he already understands, it seems, that this request of bring me back to Eretz Israel Canaan is sensitive because of the way he casts it. He doesn't say, right, God is going to bring us back, so we better be buried in Israel. He says, oh, my father made me promise that I would put him in his personal gravesite. Understand that, right? It's sort of like this personal thing with his father. It's because his father had already made it for himself. It doesn't have to do with the fact that this is his ancestral land that God has promised and it's going to bring him back. But even the very fact that Yosef seems to be omitting that shows that he's kind of aware that there's potential for a little dissonance here with Paro, right? So Paro says, fine, go bring back your father. They do. Great. Okay. So Yaakov has done whatever he's done. Right. He has not revealed to his children the full end of history. Right. But he has tried as best he could to put his house in order before he dies. And the way he does that is by giving them each a personal message and by sort of having this moment with them, according to the Midrash, where everybody affirms that we are, in fact, all in this together. Right. Like none of us is a heretic and we're all in on this project and we all believe in whatever. Right. That said, right, that moment is very nice. But now that Yaakov is dead, maybe not everybody is so sure that that's going to last, I guess you could say. So here we have, right? Yosef's brothers saw that their father died, and they said, Yosef might have just been playing a game, right? Like, maybe Yosef was being nice to us because our father was alive, right? But, like, now that our father's dead, he's going to really take it out on us, right? He's going to get his revenge. So then they sort of, they try this thing and they say, oh, our father told us before he died to be nice to us, right? You know, like forgive their sins, right? and they go and they bow down to him. But Yomer Elohim Yosef Al Tirag. Yosef says, don't fear. So I think, right, this is what I was trying to say about how the winding up of Yosef, of Yaakov's life, is connected to the winding up of the story of the creation of Bnei Israel in Sefer Bereishit, right? Because this personal family drama of, like, you know, did Yosef and Yaakov ever talk about it? Did Yaakov and the brothers ever talk about it? As far as we know, the answer is no. The brothers are kind of imagining this conversation in which they did talk about it with Yaakov, or sort of creating, in order to sort of save themselves from Yosef's ire, right? But at stake there is not just, like, is this set of brothers going to get along, but is Yaakov's vision of all mitatosh lema, of all of my children being part of the covenant, really going to be able to happen or not? And Yosef, interestingly, right, it could be that Yosef sort of says, like, based on the reading of the Dabbe Kenei Mugav, for example, maybe Yosef knows that, like, Yaakov actually didn't know what happened, right? So he's like, you're just making that up, guys, but don't worry, right? It's not my job to punish you, right? Anyways, it worked out really well because now we're all alive and all these other people. He says, I'll support you for as long as you're here. And then we're sort of going to have a soft or slow motion, a fast action replay in some ways, or like a reprise of the Yaakov deathbed scene where, right, they're sort of, they're, you know, time is skipping between, first we have like Yaakov giving bracha to Yosef, Yaakov and Menashe to Ephraim, and then he gets sick, all the brothers are there, then there's this big mourning process, and all of a sudden there's this other interaction, Yosef and the brothers, and now some amount of time passes, and then Yosef is also going to die. Rabbi Yomer Yosef Elachav, this is the very end of Sefer Bereishit, Anochi Meit, Pasuk Chav Dalet, I'm going to die, Elohim Takod Yifkod Etchem, and God will remember you, God will take you out of this land and bring you back to the land that God promised to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And he made them swear, right, God will bring you out of this, bring my bones with you. So Yama Yosef in there, and then Yosef dies, and that's the end. Okay, so, right, there's some echoes here, right? Yosef is replaying for his brothers what his father played for him, right? In some ways, it's, notwithstanding everything I've been saying about how, you know, Yaakov has all 12 of his sons and Mitatosh Leiman, he gets to pass the covenant to everybody, he still singled out Yosef as the person to give the secret of the Bribe and Abitarium to, right? And Yosef is saying, no, that's not how it's working, right? He's almost like proving what he said above, right? That it's not going to be me over the rest of you, or me against you other brothers, right? It's going to be all of us. And I'm going to tell you that by sharing this secret that our father gave to me with all of you, which is, right, this is part of a covenantal process. It might seem fine now, but it's actually not going to be fine. But God will take us out of it later, right? And we may not, none of us will see that, but it will happen, right? Meaning, implicitly, you also have to tell your descendants and your children that this might happen. Okay. So, and that's the end, right? And Yosef, right? The end of Sefer Bereishit, right? He's in Mitzrayim, which is not where you're supposed to be, according to Sefer Bereishit, though much of Sefer Bereishit does not take place in Eretz Canaan. It seems like that's where you're supposed to be, right? So he's kind of, you know, it's a little bit of a bittersweet at best ending for that one pasuk chavav. But if you look at these past three pasukim, right, then it's ending with the message that this is just the beginning, right? You may think this is the beginning, and then, you know, next week in Shemot we're going to see that it's just going to get terrible from here. But even that is just the beginning of a larger covenantal arc, sort of the three benedictarian, which is we're going to be slaves here in order to come out and go back to Eretz Canaan. So, okay. So here we have, right, Yaakov is able to some degree, right, he sort of succeeds in some way in what he was trying to do, which is, Okay, so somebody asked, right, that's actually fine. I'm going to pause for this question for a second in the chat, right? Yosef could have asked his sons instead of his brothers to bring him back, right? Does it indicate that his sons are estranged? I don't think so. I think that it indicates, right, that Yosef is intentionally making this a national project, right? Bring me back, right? Now it's interesting because he's putting himself above them, meaning like Shimon and Levi and Yehuda are presumably going to be buried in Egypt and sort of left there. But Yosef, he is giving himself a position as sort of the transmitter of the information about the covenant, but I think by telling his brothers and not just his own children, he is signaling or trying to signal that we're all in this together, right? Like Yaakov is right, right? But by Yubnei Israel, Zemasar, whatever, we're all in it together, and Yaakov is right to say, thank God all my children are worth. Okay, so we have Yaakov, the person who needs to put his affairs in order, right, who does, but only to some degree, because the nature of the covenant is that you can't really put everything in order. No one person can kind of like click off all the boxes and be like, I'm done, right? It's a national process that unfolds over time. And I think that brings us to our last source, which maybe some of us have heard, which is in some ways the opposite, right? The first source we read today was saying, oh, you know, like Yaakov is the first person who gets warning of his death, and like Yaakov's death looms really large, right? Like this scene of Yaakov's death is like more than a perek in Chumash, basically, right? That's a lot. But, right, at the same time, what we're going to see in this Gemara is in some ways the opposite, but this is the third thing that I think is picking up on the same feature of Yaakov's character or role in this story, which is A, that he has a lot to sort of wrap up in his family, but B, that the way he wraps that up, for example, by referring to the covenant, right, is the way that he turns the family into a nation. So here's how it goes. Rabbi Nachman, Rabbi Yitzchak, they were sitting and eating. Rabbi Nachman and Rabbi Yitzchak. Amar Leh Rabbi Nachman, Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Nachman said to Rabbi Yitzchak, Leh Mamar Milta, hey, why do you say a Dvar Torah? Right? Do you love it when somebody's like, say a Dvar Torah? And you're like, oh, like, even if you've been thinking about a ton of things, like, which is the thing to say a Dvar Torah? So it seems like Rabbi Yitzchak had that same moment. Sorry, Rabbi Nachman had that, Rabbi Yitzchak had that same moment. Amar Leh, Hachem, Rabbi Yochanan, Eng Nesachim Bithuda. It's like, here's a Dvar Torah for you. Let's not talk too much during our meal. Shemi Akim Kanever, maybe we're going to choke. Let's not have like this big conversation during our meal. I'll tell you after. This reminds me of one of my high school teachers who used to say before mincha, some people like to have a dvar halacha before mincha, so he would say, the halacha is you're supposed to have a halacha before mincha, right? So he's saying like, say a dvar Torah, my dvar Torah is you're not supposed to say dvar Torah during the meal. Okay, so he doesn't say the dvar Torah then, but he does say something later. And there, I mean, first of all, I always like these little like realia stories about chazal, but I think there's also some, maybe a little bit of form follows content here about something like delayed gratification, which we'll see in a second. Ba'adar desalad amarle. So afterwards, it wasn't like he was just trying to get rid of him. He really didn't want to talk then, but he does want to talk later. Afterwards, Rabbi Yitzchak says, here's what Rabbi Yochanan said. Yaakov Avinu Lomet. Our father Yaakov is not dead. Or did not die. You could read it either way. Which is like a bit of an incredible thing to say. Right? Amarle. Right? So Rabbi Nachman seems to take this literally, and he says, "Amarle v'chi bichdei saftu saftanaya right v'chantu chantaya v'kavru kavraya right." Did they for nothing? Right? He seems pretty dead according to the story in the Torah, right? Because they like said eulogies about him, and maybe fine, you can say eulogies without a body, but they like embalmed him and they buried him. These are not things that you do with people who are alive. So what do you mean he's not dead? Amarle mikrani dere. She said, "That's very nice that you're reading like this story, but I have a drasha on a pasuk, right, from Yirmiyahu, which like trumps all of the end of Sefer Breishit. And here's how it goes. Shenemar, here's what it says, Vata al tirav de Yaakov, Noam Hashem, right, don't fear my servant Jacob, right, saith the Lord, 1917 JPS translation for the win, right, Va'al techat Yisrael, don't fear or be dismayed Israel, right, parallel structure, don't fear Jacob, don't be dismayed Israel, ki hinani moshi ame rachok, right, I will save you from afar, right, and I will save your seed from the land of their captivity. Right. So first of all, how does this pasuk prove that Yaakov is alive? Does it prove that Yaakov is alive? Meaning like we have
present tense.
Okay, maybe it's in present tense. I am going to save you. It's like God talking to Yaakov. I'm going to save you, right? And it is. It's a little more unusual to refer to B'nai Yisrael as Yaakov than as Yisrael, but it's not unheard of, right? Like, we have the names of the forefathers sort of standing in for their descendants or for the nation. So it's not like it has to be that way, but I think that we're going to see, right, Mekish Hu Lazaro. Mekish means it makes a Hekesh. It connects him to his, Hekesh is like a juxtaposition where because two things are next to each other, we assume that they share property, right? So Mekish Hu Lazaro, it connects him to his children, or his descendants, right? Meaning the parallel structure in the second half of the pasuk is, I'm going to save you and your children. And it wants to say, Mazar o b'chayim, right? It's one thing to say you and your children, but you, right? It's always tricky to deal with a pasuk that has parallel structure because, right, are they the same or are they intentionally different in some way? So this midrash is reading this as these are intentionally completely different, right? You and your children are not the same thing, right? Your children are your children. That's us, right? You are you. You're dead. But, right, if we're putting you together, it must mean that you're not really dead. Even you're alive. So that's a very nice midrash, right? It works by rule of midrashic reading. Great. Okay. You know, as compared to like many, many psukim in Sefer Bereishit that talk about Yaakov being very dead, this is not like the best proof of a historical fact. But I don't think that that's what it's doing, right? It's not trying to say like, oh, actually Yaakov's not dead. Like, not dead yet, right? He's not, it's not that, right? He's actually, it's not saying like he's walking around, right? We could do just, whatever, all sorts of weird things that people say about other recently deceased historical figures. It's not, I don't think it's saying any of that. What it's saying is, right, Yaakov is effectively not dead, right? Yaakov might as well be alive, just like us, right? Through us, right? Don't be afraid, Yaakov, right? I will save you. So I want to read this back onto our Parsha of Vayechi, which is as follows, right? Yaakov sort of pulling this together, and I know maybe not all these leaders are actually in conversation with each other, but I think maybe we can put them in conversation with each other, right? Putting this back, pulling it all back together, right? Yaakov sort of wants to tie everything up into like a nice package for his descendants and hand it to them and give it to all of them and be like, you guys, you're all great. Now take it and run with it. And that doesn't work, right? You can't tie it into a package because you can't actually, right? Like, it is not the role of human beings to know the entirety of history. And that just doesn't work. But what you can do, right? You can't tell people the end, but what you can do is you can, for example, prepare them that there are going to be darker days ahead, but then they will be, you'll be saved in the end, right? And if you do that, right, you've brought them into the covenant, even though you haven't given them all the answers. Right. And you've got, and Yosef sort of finishes that job by getting buy-in from everybody about it. Right. That sort of like the children are in fact committed to all 12 of them bearing the covenant. Right. And I think that's why this pasuk is true. Right. But Yaakov, even though he doesn't get to do what he wanted, which is tie everything up. And right. That's sort of like the tragedy of dying. And that even if you have warning about your death, you're never going to really be able to tie up all the loose ends. Right. There's always going to be some conversation that you didn't have. Still, Yaakov sort of, by saying Yaakov didn't die, it's saying, right, like, what he did is actually enough, right? Even though he didn't give all the answers, what he did is actually enough, which is, right, he told them that eventually they will be saved, and that's why that's this pasuk, right? Altir of Yaakov, don't be afraid, right? I am going to save you, right? And I'm going to bring you back. Bezarcham Eretz Shivyam, I'm going to bring them back from the land of their captivity, right? This is the message that Yaakov did manage to impart, and that's why we say Yaakov Avinu Lomi, right? On the one hand, Yaakov was like, does the most dying of anyone, right? He's the one with the real deathbed scene, right? And then his eyes, you know, like the, you know, the camera fades out as his eyes close, right? Like it really happens, right? To him, unlike to anyone else, right? We're sort of like, we have the final scene with Yitzchak, and then, right, sometime later, he's like, it turns out he's dead and people show up to bury him, right? But like, Yaakov in some ways is like the most dyingest, and in some ways he's also the least dyingest because he gets to sort of put his affairs in order. He gets to transmit the covenant that makes sure his legacy, I guess we could say, lives on. So that's sort of what I think is happening in this week's parsha, right? Is that it's trying to resolve some of the central anxieties of Yaakov's life and also of Bnei Israel that have come up, which is first of all, like all of this family drama, right? What's at stake is for sure lots of interpersonal things, but also the covenant, right? Like, is the covenant going to survive? And if so, is it going to survive with the whole generation so that it can be on its way to making a nation? That was a poem, right? The generation of the nation. So like, right, because if you keep picking one son per generation, it's very hard to get to a nation, right? So are we going to be able to finally like get out of that pattern? That's question one, right? Which is wrapped up in the personal life. And then the question is, okay, like what sort of content is that nation going to carry? And Yaakov manages to sort of, Yaakov and Yosef together in these last two or three Prakim managed to sort of pull that together, right? To sort of keep everybody in the fold, as it were, and also give them, you can never give them all the information, but give them enough information that they could sort of keep hope alive, as it were, and eventually be saved as per group of a dream. So that's what I want to say. And I'm happy to take questions, comments, or thoughts.
Thank you. You want me to read you the questions if you wish, or do you want to take a look in the chat box? Let's see.
Sure. I learned. Okay. Yeah. Sorry about the auto thing. I think audio situation. I hope you people are mostly here. I think I tried to address most of these as they came up. I don't know if anyone has anything now. I made this story sort of neat in terms of Yosef and his sons, right? Yosef could have asked his sons instead of his brothers. I think it is true. Yosef is like trying to bring the brothers in, but also like, he's not going to give up on his own advantages, right? Yaakov gave him like, you know, an extra seat at the table for his sons. He's not going to be like, no. So there is a little bit of like a balance there, let's say. But I don't know. Other people listening?
See, the questions, right? They, the children call their father by their first name, Israel. Yosef would ask his sons instead of his brothers to bring him back.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to address that. I think that, like, he could have, and I think it is, you know, I think that in some ways asking the brothers is, like, more inclusive of them.
So and his it's
showing
sons,
that, like, a founding generation.
His sons had nothing to do with, you know, Canaan. The sons didn't know from the land of Israel, never lived there, you know, and for them to, and they, you know, it would be hard for them to go. I mean, it was, the brothers couldn't go either. It was, and who even know, you know, what happened to, you know, what's, somebody just told me, apparently Ramaz, yes, they had not a shlosh, the end of the Shiva for Rav Henkin. So I couldn't listen to most of it. My wife was listening to it, and she told me that one of the speakers mentioned that Rav Henkin was a very original thinker and creative thinker. And one of the things he said is that Yosef had many children, not only Ephraim and Manasseh, and the other children assimilated into Egypt. He had worked with Ephraim and Manasseh, the oldest, but then he got very busy in the high court. That was a fascinating idea that I've never heard before. And of course, we have no way of knowing. But, you know, we know very little about Yosef's wife and whatever. You know, Yosef is a complex figure.
Right. I mean, I think it is interesting, Omar, like, in the naming of his children, Yosef is sort of working out his relationship to Eretz Yisrael, right? The first one, he says, God has made me forget the land, you know, all of my problems in my father's house. And the second one, he says, God is funny, there is no need, right, in the land of my suffering. So, right. On the one, the first one refers to Eretz Canaan, but in a way of like, I'm glad to be rid of that. The second one refers to Eretz Yisrael, but in a way of like, I understand that this is a place of suffering. So there is some sort of growth in his understanding of his relationship to Eretz Yisrael through the naming of his children. But I think fundamentally not giving it, Yaakov gave it to Yosef, right? Again, like Yaakov seems to want to have everybody, but he's also giving Yosef a little extra. Like he hasn't quite gotten over the favoritism of Yosef. And by Yosef, instead of giving it to his sons, giving it to his brothers, is saying, this is not a family thing, this is a nation thing, and we're all part of this nation.
Okay, thank you very much. So, like I mentioned, the last of 306 shiurim that we've had on Zoom, plus the 7 we had on Adobe Acrobat, that was in the pre-Zoom days in February, we had a series. So I want to, I'm sure many of you got it, just sent it out, 2 hours ago, our schedule for the winter. For the ongoing shiurim, like partially, you don't have to re-register. I will send you the updated link. The link's going to switch, but you don't have to register for it. You'll still get it. But all the other new classes, please register. It is December the 31st at 9:28 Eastern Standard Time. So if anybody would still like to, we're still accepting donations for all the work we're doing. I'm going to put the link up there. You can just click on there and make a donation. That'd be greatly appreciated. Of course, you know, this is the time. You get the tax savings right away and the benefits for next year. So like I mentioned, 306 classes, 74 teachers, 26,000 hours or so of live watching, thousands more of hours on YouTube and listening in. So we can only do it because of all of you. And it's been a pleasure to learn with everybody. I know, Miriam, you're just, you know, you're new here, but I don't do this too often. Very, very, very rare. But I'm just saying. So anyways, want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. And it should be 2021 should be a better year for the world. It should be a year, like I mentioned early last night, Vayechi. It should be a year of Vayechi, which unfortunately was not the year 2020. And please God, there's light at the end of the tunnel. It has to go quickly. But we should all be well, and we look forward to a wonderful year. Even we can say that, I think, anytime. December 31st, 29th of Elul, whenever it's applicable. So be well, be safe, and we look forward to learning from you. Menachem Liebtag, Sunday morning, 11:15. We'll see y'all. Thanks a lot. Have a good night.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Shabbat shalom.